Thank you. This is really a most awesome honor, and although I have to admit it does feel just a little bit weird to be receiving an award that I thought up. It's kind of like, here's your trophy, Mr. Heisman. I had a little interesting experience at lunch I want to share with you. We got into a conversation with somebody from the Bull Riders convention that's here. And he started talking about, well, first of all, he's like, y'all from the atheist convention? And we answered in the affirmative. And he started talking about what he called a foxhole buddy. He explained to us that he never served, but many of his friends did, and they told him about how, you know, you're under fire, and half the guys are running away, and you're in a foxhole, and somebody drops into the foxhole with you. That's your foxhole buddy. And my girlfriend Joan says, well, it's kind of funny that you should bring that up, and went on to explain that I am, in fact, an atheist in a foxhole. And he introduced a couple of the other riders to us, and the disdain from them was palatable. Neither of them would make eye contact. One of them wouldn't even shake my hand. But we went on to have a conversation and a couple of drinks with this guy, and he seemed pretty decent. I think he went away with a little bit different point of view, actually, because I believe that was probably the first time in his life that he had ever knowingly had a conversation with an atheist. And once he realized that we didn't worship Satan and eat babies, he seemed pretty okay. He even offered us free tickets to the rodeo. But before I get started here with the whole cross story, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I grew up in a religious household. My dad was hardcore, deep south, Southern Baptist. My mom from Church of England. And I went to Catholic school. So if I ever want a prescription for medical marijuana, that's all I got to tell them. I first began to have my doubts about God. I guess about the same time most kids do. We started to figure out the science we were learning didn't really match the technological capability of another mythological character, Santa Claus. And because of my circle of childhood friends, all our fathers were in the Air Force. We're there surrounded by the greatest and latest in jet fighter and space technology. And, you know, little conversations 7-8-year-old kids have, we begin to understand that the technology Santa Claus had, the Air Force didn't, and that just wasn't possible. So there was only one logical conclusion. Santa Claus, unlike the United States Air Force, probably didn't exist, and if Santa Claus didn't exist, well, you know where that goes. So I began to have some really serious doubts about the truth and accuracy of religious stories. When one evening in the basement of the Rosedale Baptist Church in Covington, Kentucky, I discovered that the blood of Christ comes cleverly disguised in a can of Hi-C grape juice. So I've been an atheist, skeptic, agnostic, non-believer, free thinker for most of my life. Shortly after moving to San Diego in 1980, I became more out and more activist when I connected with the San Diego Humanist Group while volunteering as clinic defense for the local Planned Parenthood. Then I discovered FFRF when Dan Barker's concert tour series brought him to San Diego, and the rest, as they say, is history. But I still don't have a t-shirt from that concert. So now about this cross thing. The Mount Soledad Cross sits atop one of the most picturesque spots in San Diego County. It's about 43 feet tall, and it's made of concrete, painted white, and up until about 1989, it sat there all by itself. It was erected in 1984, same year I was, and officially named the Mount Soledad Easter Cross. There was never any kind of services held recognizing veterans. There was no services on Memorial Day, no services on Armistice Day, no services on D-Day or VE Day. But you can bet your last dollar there was a service every Easter Sunday. Now, it may come as a surprise to some that San Diego is actually a really conservative place. The area where Mount Soledad Cross sits, La Jolla, Spanish for the jewel, and that is one of the richest locations in the country. In fact, as I was driving Annie Laurie up to the cross just a few weeks ago, I commented, you know, you can tell we're in the really good part of town because the car behind us is a Maserati. The earliest record of the cross being placed on Mount Soledad was in 1913, and although considerably smaller than the current cross and made of wood, it was twice knocked down during storms and replaced. God apparently didn't like the original models. In the 20s and 30s, the KKK was very active in San Diego. In fact, roughly a block from my house used to be the site of the KKK headquarters for San Diego and Imperial counties. And details are kind of sketchy, but at some point it's thought that most of the members of San Diego city government and a police force were active KKK members. And the La Jolla at the time was a very white place. And I happen to think when we were looking at the news item yesterday, the cross that was on top of the water tower, and on the water tower it says Whiteville. Whiteville, really? Your town is called Whiteville? I want to know what your hunting area is named. So it was WASP only. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, nobody else. And that was actually written into the CC&Rs. Real estate agents up until well into the 60s were not allowed to sell houses to non-whites or even Jewish people. It wasn't until the Scripps Institution of Oceanography settled in the area that those rules began to change, simply because the Scripps Institute hired scientists, and a lot of scientists happened to be Jewish. So for that, they had to change the rules. So did the KKK actually burn crosses atop Mount Soledad? Well, in all likelihood, yes. Of course, with many members of the city being involved in the KKK, details are sketchy, and of course they're not going to accurately write that history. But what we know for sure is that Gregory Peck documented in his biography, and an excerpt from that comes around in the slideshow here, witnessed as a young boy cross burnings in and around the La Jolla area. And later in life, he would draw on that experience while making the film To Kill a Mockingbird. So that cross is not just necessarily a symbol of Christian love and salvation. To some, it's a symbol of hatred and racism. The last wooden cross erected on Mount Soledad in the 20s was blown down by a storm in 1952. The present cross, again erected in 1954, was named the Mount Soledad Easter Cross, and it was dedicated, quoting from the dedication ceremony, as a reminder of God's promise to man of everlasting life and those persons who gave their lives for our freedom. The primary stated objective in erecting the cross on the site was to construct a, again quoting, permanent, handsome, cast concrete cross, and to create a park worthy of this magnificent view and worthy to be the setting for the symbol of Christianity. Although the cross stood alone for most of its history, it has now become the centerpiece of a more extensive war memorial. The memorial now features about 6 concentric walls around the base of the cross, approximately 2,100 black stone plaques honoring individual veterans, platoons, and service groups, and 23 bollards honored community and veterans organizations. An American flag, of course, flies from a huge flagpole. Now, in 1989, 2 Vietnam veterans, one of whom was Phil Paulson, the first recipient of the Atheist in Foxhole Award, sued the city seeking to remove the cross from city land. Those 2 cases were combined, and ultimately the veterans prevailed. It was actually a fairly quick lawsuit. The court found that the cross's location on city land violated the no preference clause of the California Constitution. So it's important to note that it was originally decided under the California Constitution, not the U.S. Constitution. And the California No Preference Clause is pretty simple. The state or no state governmental entity shall show any preference to religion or non-religion. There's very little wiggle room. So the court held that to the extent that the cross could be construed as a war memorial, it was only a memorial in the sense that it would be a sectarian memorial carrying an inherently religious message and creating the appearance of honoring only Christian veterans, simply because the thing is so big. The city of San Diego sold the land to the Mount Soledad Memorial Association, a sale that was ultimately deemed to be illegal. Because the open bid process had not been followed. What followed was a mind-numbing series of appeals, filings, counterfilings, special elections, city council meetings, special city council meetings, more special elections, more than a few backroom deals, and yet another special election. Immediately after the sale, the Mount Soledad Memorial Association, led by Charles Lamondry of the Thomas More Law Center, which is one of those groups that advocates for religious freedom, just religious freedom, especially Christian religious freedom. And they began construction on the memorial that now sits under the cross. And you can see that huge stuff there beneath the cross is all new. It's all been installed since 1989 in an attempt to turn the cross into a bona fide war memorial. So everything that exists there except the cross itself was added after the judge declared the cross unconstitutional in an attempt by the city to circumvent the judge's order. Could I get a glass of water, please? Now, sometime in the summer of 2006, I got a phone call at work. Steve, it's Phil Paulson. I'm dying. Phil was always a man of few words. He went on to explain that he needed someone to take over the case, and he had cancer and about a few months to live. And if no one took the case would die with him. So, you know, sometimes opportunity knocks, and sometimes it blows down the door like a DEA agent. Thank you. And to make things just a little bit more interesting, Phil's death came at the start of a huge flurry of activity surrounding the cross. The first hurdle, of course, to me taking over Phil's case was this issue of standing. I had to be able to demonstrate that I had standing at least equivalent to Phil's. Now, this issue of standing is probably the biggest obstacle we're facing right now regarding church-state separation issues. By questioning standing, the courts are quite literally denying citizens access to the judicial system and inhibiting their ability to right a constitutional wrong. Let me put that another way. If the court denies one of us standing on a constitutional church-state separation issue, or Mitch actually had this right, state-church separation, they are at the most fundamental level denying our right to redress our government for grievances. And if Phil, in 1989, had had to face the same level of qualification for standing that is present now, this case probably would have never seen the light of day. So I've had to tell the court, you know, that I feel left out when I see the cross. As a veteran who's not represented, I have to say that I can't enjoy the park because the cross is there. And I have to be able to demonstrate some kind of harm. And the reality, of course, is that the cross has not harmed me. A piece of it hasn't fallen off and landed on my car. I haven't bumped my head on it. And personally, I think it's kind of intellectually dishonest because I'm not the one harmed by the cross being on government land. The Constitution is what's harmed. And in that sense, all of us are harmed. It's disturbing that the courts are inhibiting citizens' rights to right constitutional wrongs by denying access to those very same courts. So, and you have to ask, if the average citizen can't bring these kind of cases, who will? So in my this is what I said in my statement to the court in answer to an interrogatory about my standing. So I'm quoting myself here. "The presence of the cross makes me feel as if I'm a second-class citizen. A clearly Christian symbol sits atop one of the most significant geographical features of San Diego, with the full acquiescence and encouragement of the local and, more recently, federal governments. That feeling is reinforced by statements by city officials, such as when Mayor Maureen O'Connor declared in an interview with television reporters, 'San Diego is a Christian city.' To put this in context, imagine the outrage if the mayor had said, 'San Diego is a white city.'" I didn't know at the time that Whiteville had already been taken. Implicit in these kind of comments, and the case represented by the cross, is an official position of exclusion toward a minority group. If the Mount Soledad Memorial is to be viewed from the perspective of a tribute to veterans, which of course it wasn't until 1989, the presence of a Christian cross, absent any other religious symbol, sends a clear message that the service of Christian veterans is more significant than that of those with differing beliefs. This is not so much about how the existence of a cross on a mountaintop harms one particular individual or group. It is about the harm done to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of California by the unconstitutional and conspiratorial actions of public officials and legislatures who enacted a law with the express purpose of maintaining a Christian symbol. In other words, Congress plainly made a law respecting the establishment of religion, and in doing so, violated my First Amendment rights." End quote. Meanwhile, the city decided to donate the land underneath the Mount Soledad cross to the federal government. Representatives Duncan Hunter and Randy Cunningham, who I think is still in jail, facilitated that by slipping a rider into the 2005 budget, designated Mount Soledad Cross as a federal war memorial. After that bill was signed into law in December 2004, the San Diego City Council declined to donate the property on the advice of the city attorney, who wisely publicly stated that the move would violate both state and federal constitutions. The donation question was then submitted to the voters as Proposition A. Prop A garnered 76% of the vote, but a state court enjoined its implementation. While the appeal of the state court injunction was pending, the federal district court issued an order directing the city to remove the cross within 90 days or pay a daily fine of $5,000. The city appealed and sought a stay. Pending appeal, we need a whiteboard for this, you know, which the Ninth Circuit denied that appeal. Justice Kennedy of the Supreme Court overruled the Ninth and granted the city's stay application. Then in June of 2006, Representatives Duncan Hunter, Daryl Issa, and Brian Bilbray introduced H.R. 5683, which proposed to seize the land beneath the cross by eminent domain. The House approved the bill by a vote of 349-74. The Senate approved it by unanimous consent. And the act authorized a land transfer. Quoting from the bill, "In order to preserve a historically significant war memorial designated as the Mount Soledad Veterans Memorial in San Diego, California, as a national memorial honoring veterans of the United States Armed Forces." Federal government took possession of the memorial in August of 2006, and it is now managed by the Navy. Now, just as an aside, it's interesting to note the cross being maintained by the Navy. And those of you who have been in the Navy or are familiar with it will recall the mantra, "If it moves, salute it. If it doesn't, paint it." Yet recently, when the cross needed painting, the Navy was nowhere to be found. I think they were all in Iraq. Local contractor stepped up and, to his credit, took on the project, donated time and materials, and put a nice fresh coat of white paint on it. And frankly, for a big, ugly concrete replica of an execution device, it looks pretty good. Phil and I both filed temporary restraining orders to stop the land transfer, but the motions were both denied for, guess what, lack of standing. But I now have a piece of paper that says Steve Trunk versus George W. Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, and Doe's 1 through 100. And that is now one of my proudest possessions. I took out a restraining order on W. The bummer was, though, that it's not the same kind of restraining order that you can get from, like, an ex-spouse. Because I really wanted to be able to pick up the phone and say, hey, police, yeah, he's invading another country. So up until this point, the ACLU had not been involved at all. The case was being handled entirely by pro bono by Jim McElroy of the Southern Poverty Law Center. And yeah, Jim's a great guy. He was the guy who took down Tom Metzger. Anybody not know who Tom Metzger was? Tom Metzger ran a group called WAR, White Aryan Resistance. And Jim's story is that he just happened to be in his office one day when Morris Dees, who actually runs the Southern Poverty Law Center, was there visiting, and Jim just went down the hall to meet him and just said, you know, if there's anything I can do, let me know. And the rest, as they say, is history. And Metzger's still in jail, I think. Yet now, once this literally became a federal case, a group called the Jewish War Veterans got involved. The Jewish War Veterans are one of the oldest active veterans associations in the United States. They go back to the Civil War. And they describe themselves as a group that, quote, engages in extensive advocacy of religious liberty. That's something I want to be able to put on my resume. Once the ACLU brought in their big guns, the court combined my case with the Jewish War Veterans and two other litigants who are Muslim. Once the cross and the memorial and the land under it became federal property, there was another flurry of legal activity and motions that sought to relieve the city of any legal burden. The city was cleared and the case moved on to the federal level. The whole idea behind this was that since it was declared unconstitutional under the California Constitution, it would be safe under the U.S. Constitution. It's not working out that way for him. Federal Court Justice Larry Burns, who coincidentally is also presiding over Jared Loughner's case. He's the guy that shot the congresswoman in Phoenix, I think it was. Issued a ruling on which the Ninth Circuit overturned. Judge Burns decided that the cross, because there's just so many of them around, is a secular symbol, and therefore wasn't subject to the Establishment Clause, the Free Exercise Clause, the No Preference Clause of the California Constitution. Now, I've always said if I were a Christian, I'd be really upset at the ruling, because the judge just took the preeminent symbol of my religion and made it just another logo. So, fundamentally, what the Ninth Circuit has ruled, they simply overturned Judge Burns' decision. And their ruling is that, yes, the cross is a sectarian symbol. Now, it is, by any reasonable definition, the preeminent symbol of Christianity, and it is, by orders of magnitude, the dominant feature of that particular war memorial. I mean, if you've seen from the pictures, it's huge. And there are not very many places you can go in San Diego on a clear day and not see it. In ruling, the court said that even though Representatives Issa and Bilbray and Senator Sessions had clearly indicated the purpose of the bill was preservation of crops on federal land, they found that the overall purpose in Congress enacting the law to preserve the war memorial was secular. Now, I believe they ruled that narrowly to reduce the potential for appeal. This thing has been in front of the Ninth Circuit like three or four times over the past couple decades, and I don't think they want to see it again. The case now goes back to federal district court to find a remedy. So it's still there. No court has yet decided what to do with it. But we now know it is once again a unconstitutional religious symbol on public land. And currently, the Thomas More Law Center and the Mount Soledad Memorial Association have filed for a motion for an en banc hearing before the full panel in the Ninth Circuit. And again, I don't think my gut feeling is that the Ninth is not going to grant that, again, because they don't want to see this again. So what's it like having your name on a case like this? My predecessor, Phil Paulson, had earned the unenviable title of most hated man in San Diego. And he was given a new first name, Atheist. Whenever there was a news report that involved Phil, he was always referred to as Atheist Philip Paulson. And I fortunately have had the option to let the ACLU attorneys take the heat. Have I received any death threats? Well, not directly. But find any article about the cross in any blog, and imagine reading and sharing the crank mail in FFRF today, and they're all addressed to you. I guess that's what Annie Laurie feels like every day. Our very own right-wing radio talk show host, Roger Hedgecock, has called for the wholesale roundup and execution of atheists. So I'm pretty secretive about my involvement with this case. In fact, there's one person in my work, I go to his cube, and he's got pictures of the Mount Soledad cross all over. He must have at least a dozen pictures of the cross hanging up, newspaper article clippings. Some of them have my name in them. And I'm there working on his computer, and I wonder if he, is making a connection. And how would he react if he did? So it's kind of unnerving at times. And on the other hand, though, when the issue does come up, I find people are generally pretty supportive, even if they don't particularly agree with my position. And I usually tell them something along the lines of, how some people are about how NRA people are about the Second Amendment. Well, I'm that way about the First. And they usually are okay. But they frequently respond like, do you know the phrase separation of church and state is not in the Constitution? And I tell them, well, neither is a right to privacy, but you're going to deny you have one? And the critics often ask such, no doubt, rhetorical questions like, what's next? You're going to take all the crosses out of Arlington? And I have to explain to them, well, first of all, you're thinking of the American cemetery in Normandy. But in the case of a gravesite, while the cemetery may be public land, the gravesite, the actual gravesite, that pretty much belongs to the dead guy. And no, what I and the rest of the people involved in a lawsuit want is to move the cross from public land and really quit using the sacrifice and memory of veterans to advertise your religion. So I know this has been kind of short. I really didn't have I didn't have any real clear idea of what you guys wanted to know about. So let's find out now and open it up to questions. Incidentally, this is a picture of the signing. Mitch, are you here to make trouble?
Hey, Steve, congratulations.
Thank you.
And to all the atheists in the foxhole. But let me ask you, have you thought about what you're going to do and how you're going to celebrate when they tear that thing down?
Frankly, no. it's something that seems so far in the future that I just really haven't, you know, maybe I'll retire. It might come about the same time.
Just please invite us.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Annie Laurie will probably fly out.
Steve, I just wanted to comment. As you know, we have a parallel in San Francisco.
Yes, the Mount Davidson Cross.
Mount Davidson, in the two cases, we're going back and forth. But I discovered through this that California really is a weird place. And particularly San Francisco, because San Francisco and its great tolerance, and I think that's part of our problem. Part of the thing there is that it's kind of like, well, we have to accept it like we accept everything else. But the stories that went into that thing were just so bizarre. And one of the reasons that the city didn't want to take it down, which ties into what was the last question, is it would be too expensive to take it down. And yet they spent thousands of dollars fighting to keep it up. You know, it was going to cost money to take it down. And the thing that bothered me the most in the whole thing is that the cross, as the Mount Soledad cross, was put up as an Easter cross. And that's in the newspapers of the day. And yet our own board of supervisors argued that they should keep the cross because it was really a memorial to the First World War veterans, which was an outright lie. And that was what voters were basing their vote on, what the city council said. And just, I'm getting some things off my chest at the moment, I think it says. But just to show how crazy, one of the people who insisted the cross stay there was our Jewish Senator Dianne Feinstein, which to me was just appalling.
Who never met a war she didn't like.
Yeah. But anyway, the upshot of ours is that the property was sold to an organization of Armenians, and it's now a memorial to the Armenian Holocaust. And they own the space around the cross. So it's no longer public property.
Well, one of the arguments for keeping the cross that is kind of prevalent in San Diego, especially in the radio circuit, is that it's a navigational aid.
Oh, yeah.
Although there are no lights on it, so apparently it's only a daytime navigational aid. For those of you who fly, it's VFR only. But the I have to wonder if it is taken down, or airplanes going to start falling out of the sky? And
maybe so. this Armenian organization was just formed in order to save this cross, and it is not a religious organization, but it only has one officer who is an archbishop. But they're the ones that now protect the cross.
Okay.
I want to cover that.
Okay. Last question.
Yeah. Do you anticipate that this will ever get to the Supreme Court, and how do you think it would fare with the current makeup?
I fear that if this makes it to the Supreme Court, we'll lose.
Well, on that note.
Thank you.